Welcome back to the Visionary Rising podcast. In today's episode, I'm going to be talking to one of my mentors, seven-figure business coach, Melanie Aubert. We're having a conversation about some trends in the online marketing space, as well as how to scale and grow your business and stand out from the competition. We're going to be discussing the effort required for effortlessness, debunking some of the myths about ease in business, exploring live versus evergreen launches, and talking about the importance of owning your personal brand. This is a really candid and fun conversation that is going to leave you empowered and excited to keep marketing your business online. So let's get into it. Welcome to The Visionary Rising, the podcast for freedom-seeking, heart-led, creative entrepreneurs, course creators, and online business owners. I'm Jody Brown, marketing-obsessed hairstylist turned content creation agency owner and visibility mentor, and I'm here to help you build your magnetic brand, grow your audience, and become the authority in your space. You'll get the most up-to-date conversations and strategies on visibility, marketing, social media, mindset, and entrepreneurship so that you can grow your business in a way that feels as good as it looks. Here, we keep it real and go beyond the basics. I'm obsessed with helping creatives get seen and heard and paid well for their work. Beyond a podcast, this is a movement. Welcome to The Visionary Rising. Hello, and welcome back to The Visionary Rising podcast. Today's episode is a special one because my coach, Melanie Aubert, is here. I love how you just have such a refreshing take. I was really drawn to you because of how you kind of go against the grain. And so One of those things that really pulled me into working with you was you were speaking on the effort required for effortlessness. And I've talked a little bit on the podcast recently about kind of the trend that we're seeing about, you know, there's a lot of talk about how everything needs to feel easy. I think that a lot of the time people are confusing ease with comfort and doing what they already know how to do and what already feels comfortable. And so I can't wait to chat with you about that today. But before we get into it, can you just tell my listeners a little bit about your story and how you got into what you're doing today, taking the online world by storm?
Yes. Thank you for the introduction. I'm excited to be here. I am a corporate dropout turned multi seven-figure CEO, and I have been in the online space doing a plethora of things, started as a fitness coach, then got into marketing for other people, ended up working for Boss Babe, other bigger entrepreneurs, until I realized that I wanted to bring a different texture of what marketing and selling is to the online space. And that is just kind of how I stumbled into this. So thank you for the mirroring back, the just me going against the grain, because it really matters to me. And I'm just here, truly my zone of genius and what I want to bring into the world is just changing how we see traditional selling. Because again, coming from corporate, very, very masculine, very push, very much not the way we want to create easy. Most people just chase easy or what they think is going to create easy in the moment. That is how I got here and, you know, how I'm just doing the thing.
I love that. So with the conversation that we just kind of alluded to previously about, you know, the searching for ease and everything has to feel easy and all of these different things, I know that we're kind of aligned on certain things. One of those is that I believe that it's avoiding discomfort in a way, avoiding new ideas, avoiding new things, and sometimes avoiding like putting in the work. What does that mean to you when you think about effort required for effortlessness?
Yeah, I would say for a lot of people, when they lack that long-term vision of what they're wanting to create or do or experience within their business, that's when they don't know how to compound current efforts to then create effortlessness. What I mean by this is if I, an example where I'm just going to use is like, I want to create easy money or easy sales, right? And if I want to create that ease of me just making money while I'm doing nothing or making money while I'm sipping cocktails at the beach, whatever that excuse is, it's like, what can I do to compound my current strategy to get me to a place where that is achievable? We forget that when it comes to creating easy, not chasing it, there is work required. And when we don't, again, have that long-term vision of what is easy for me, like what when I think about an easy business, what does that look like? And for me personally, it's like, I want to make money while I'm at the park with my son. If that's the case, I'm going to do the work now to create that for myself. for a lot of people, when it comes to their sales process or how they're currently marketing or their business model in general, it's when they market, oh my gosh, I'm making sales without doing anything. It's like you're just leveraging what you created 3 months ago. And now you're taking advantage of it. And you're going to find yourself back in that same thing where you have to like work really hard to create the ease, to then enjoy it, to then create it again, to enjoy it. So again, it's just that lacking that long-term vision of what do you actually want? What does ease look like for you? And then let's put in the work to create that. It's really that simple. But we avoid it because it's work. So.
And I think that's like the key is the fact that, like you said, there is all this ease that can be created. But I think ease means different things to different people as well. And like for some people, you know, maybe ease looks like consistent income without feeling like they need to sell all the time. Maybe it does look like those passive streams of income. And I'm using quotation marks. For anyone who's listening and can't see this, because I think that the word has been like weaponized a little bit in my experience. We hear the term like evergreen, right? And we think or passive and it's not less work. It's just different work. And I know that you still utilize live launching. So you have a lot of like, quote unquote, passive offers. You do things a little bit differently in terms of live launching and then having evergreen offers. So do you have an opinion on like, is evergreen easier, live launching easier? What is that sweet spot in terms of creating that?
So I would say, honestly, when it comes to what's easier, to me, they're both the same. And what I mean by that is, I think that's where people think that like there's illusions, right? Of like live is better because I can see things happening in front of me, or pass is better because I'm not doing anything. It's like, that's not the case for either. When it comes to live or evergreen, it's the same amount of work that I'm putting in. I'm already doing the work. I might just do what I like to do that's working. And for me, I really enjoy both the live aspect and also the passive aspect. And for me, I'm a long-term girly. So when it comes to like long-term goals for myself, I always look, how can I leverage what I'm doing live and active now to then compound for me passively? So as you know, like how I teach launching, it's after you do a live launch, what can we automate? So it's like, I'm always finding ways to make my life easier tomorrow versus just capitalizing on what is happening right now. So I'd say, with the evergreen and just that whole conversation, there's so much, there's the illusion that passive income is just all you need is a passive offer. And that's not true. It still requires just how you're, the messaging, the marketing, everything like that you're currently actually doing, how is that contributing to the selling for you long-term? So I love both because I don't think we should ever be reliant on one pathway of cash. So for me, it's, can I build momentum live and then also capitalize on that to create passive cash flow behind the scenes?
I love that. And I love that approach. It kind of reminds me of investing. Like I'm reading a book all about investing to make your money work for you long term. And I think it's it's exactly what you're describing, but with your other resource, which is your time, right? You're leveraging what you've done with your time to create that in the future. And it's interesting too, because, and I'm not sure if you've had the same experience, but I find sometimes there's evergreen so easy being sold to people online. And I think it's because it's simple, right? People get burned out by launching. So if they're launching in a certain way, in that like hyper-masculine way, like you've said, and then it's almost like evergreen's the solution. But I actually find that it's sometimes more work on the front end before you start to see that return. And so it's not that there's this one way that's going to make it easy. I also believe that it's a lot of it's due with the messaging, the desire, like all of those things that are the need for what you have and your connection with your audience.
I'd even say too, for the people who have a difficulty selling the passive, there's two things to look at is one for, and this was me when I was first in like earlier stages of business, I was like passive queen when everyone was like maxing out private coaching and they were surpassing me in cash months, but I was like, I know what I'm building, right? So it's like, also just being clear on what you're working toward. Again, long-term is so important, but two, people find live launching to be easier because they use a lot of FOMO and scarcity to drive sales. And when it comes to passive offers, they're more reliant on desire-based messaging to really get someone to buy without the urgency factor. So of course we can like customize that, but that's where a lot of people have a difficulty when it comes to passive, when if you just were to take that urgency out of both live and passive, how would you market? And when you can master that sweet spot, you can sell anything long term, forever, always, at any price point, every single day. It's never the online space is no longer buying. Taylor Swift has become a billionaire in this economy. So it's like she's doing her thing. When it comes to just buying behavior now, is I feel like people have gotten smarter. It's reached like a maturation of people now have, they're not activated by that same hype, right? So I'd argue, and I always wonder this, is it really that is it just because you need to speak to a new ideal client who's not motivated by hype and urgency? Or is it they know that if you're relying on hype and urgency, you're going to have another sale in 3 months. So like, I'll just wait to buy. You know what I mean? So it's just like, I always wonder which one it is, the chicken before the egg kind of thing. But yeah, I think it might be a combo of both. But it's when we look at the online space, I'd argue one of the biggest pieces too, how many more people there are online. And there's a lot of people doing a lot of the same things. And when we fail to showcase how we are the solution versus just another solution, that does make also a very big difference.
100%. This is such a big piece of the personal brand conversation that I don't think we think about as much. We aren't thinking about how it pertains to the offers that we have and how we serve our clients, because there is so much conversation oversimplifying personal branding. And actually last week, I just did an episode about really differentiating yourself and how branding is the art of differentiation. So I think that really, really ties in here.
Absolutely. People tend to think too, when it comes to personal brand, it's just tonality or how we look or what colors we use. And I see a lot of people in the online space questioning, should I use the color black or the color red? And I'm like, none of that matters. What I think people oftentimes think that categorizes how they should show up versus it being like an actual embodied self-expression. Like, you naturally approach your work differently. You naturally show up a certain way. You naturally value certain things. And even though you sell something in the same niche as somebody else, how you do it is so different. And when you know how to bring that forward through your brand, it's a game changer. Yeah.
I totally agree. So from your perspective, what do you think is holding people back from truly stepping into themselves and stepping into their personal brands? This is something we do a lot of work around in our retreats. And I'm so curious to hear your perspective on why you think that entrepreneurs sometimes hold themselves back from truly expressing all of those things, that embodiment and the way that they approach their work differently.
I see it through two different lenses. I see it through one lens, you're actually so integrated in your work that it's so normalized that you forget to own it. That's one piece. When the fear comes in of like, ooh, is this an edge to say like, ooh, I did this, or ooh, I've been a part of this success, or whatever that is for you, it's looking at what is the actual fear? Like, what is the fear of owning that? And I think that part of that comes through with just how we have demonized and weaponized, right? Wealthy women and just what it looks like to be of someone who holds confidence. Like, we've been trained since we were children to raise our hands and cross our legs and like be polite, ask for permission. And it's when we act with that audacity of like, no, I'm just going to own that. And I think that there's fear there of what does that look like? How will I be perceived if I do take ownership? Because we've been shown that women of, or anyone of power, typically is not the greatest role model or not the greatest example for us in terms of how they've used their success in real life. It is shame. Well, we're taught to be humble. We're taught to be humble, and we're taught that being the Mother Teresa of it all is attractive. And I think that when it comes to just the confidence and the assertiveness of just saying like, yeah, you know, and a good example is like looking at how we take compliments is always like a nice reflection of how quickly women in general are very quick to be like, you're pretty. You're like, oh, you're pretty. Like, we can't even just say like, yeah, I am pretty. How awkward is that to say, right? It's like, you're going to say that you're pretty. That's weird. You should be humble and say that you don't know that you're pretty. So it's just a weird, we've been trained, and like being a parent has really helped me with this, because I think about my son and when he says, I'm smart, I'm this, I'm like, you own that, you know, like own that, be loud about it. And when we're adults, we have to somehow like silence that. And like, it's weird if we say like, I am smart, I am this, I am that. And it's just weird to me how that translates into business too. And I think if we look at children too, it's like almost this, well, if he were to own his confidence, it's going to make someone else feel bad about themselves. But how I see it is, the more confident we are, the more permission we're giving to someone else to own theirs too. So I think that there's like this uncomfortableness of like saying, you know, like fuck humility and just like owning what we do and then being the permission slip for other people behind us to be like, you know what? I am smart. I am brilliant. I am a genius. Like, I think that hide a lot of that to appease the perception of society of it, we should be humble. And I don't agree with it. Yeah.
Yes. And I see there's, you know, there's always conversation about like relatability and, you know, making sure that people can relate to you and all of these things. And I think that there's not enough emphasis on also like owning that authority and how you can help people and what you do, because people won't know unless you tell them. I did a private podcast series called The Content Edit. And if you haven't listened to this yet, go comment edit on any of my Instagram posts and you will see what I'm talking about. It's a free series that you can binge, but it really is so important. If you are going to build your business online, if you're going to make a name for yourself, you have to get comfortable owning what you help people with, because like I said, people are not going to know if you don't tell them. And it's so important to build that confidence and to look through and to create that evidence that you can do what you say you're going to do. Because if you genuinely want to help people and you genuinely want to make a difference, you can't do that unless they know how. So yeah, I love the idea of just dropping the humility and like the embarrassment and the shame when it comes to owning what you do.
What's the point? It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I would love to hear, Melanie, your opinion on what do you see shifting and changing in the online space? This could be observation, prediction. I'd just love to know what you're seeing happening.
Yeah, I would say that what I've seen starting to shift quite a bit is what was selling previously is no longer selling. And what I mean by this is there was like a, I don't know if you saw this wave, but a lot of people were selling the same thing in the sense of like being close proximity or one-on-one. They were selling like it was very elusive or intangible, or like it was a very pay to be in close proximity. You should be doing this. You should be doing that. And people did buy into that. And they were also selling that and then realized like, okay, that's not selling the way that it was anymore. People don't just pay for close proximity, right? So I think that that's coming into play of people having to really get clear on what is their iteration of close proximity. And can they show the value of how they lead any kind of space, close proximity courses, programs, whatever it is. So that is really, really big. What I've also seen is the online space has been like weeding a lot of people out. So the idea of sales being slow for people who are like, oh, I can't hold this, I'm going to bounce. I've seen quite a bit of that. And I'd argue people forget that everything ebbs and flows. Every industry, everything has a fluctuation, like an inhale, exhale kind of moment. It's a good time for those who stick through it will come on the other side and it'll hit a boom again. It's like real estate, the stock market, everything that goes up, comes down, goes back up again. So it's just seeing the people who can hold that will be huge. I will say for predictions, authenticity or more unfilteredness in content is going to be a big trend. So more of like the influencer vibe is going to be big, of like knowing the person in the business. That'll be huge. I think there'll also be an influx of people wanting to have real conversations with how many automations we have and how many things that are just like automated touch points. There will be an influx of people wanting to have conversations, and that can be done through, you know, Q&As or just like personalized feedback for the collective, or if it's in live settings or live master, just some kind of like an actual feel for who the person is behind the offer is going to be big too, because everything is so just, it's automated. Good things, but yeah, we lose that touch point.
Yeah, I love that. I've actually been telling my clients that it's okay to have touch points. I think there was so much of this conversation around like everything has to be, you know, really scalable. And it's almost like the message was, it's not okay for people to reach out and ask questions, which I think is a little bit alienating, because at the end of the day, like if someone messages you with a question, like that's incredible. That gives you the opportunity to chat with them and they can figure out whether or not working with you is a good fit. Because if your intention is to serve and get people great results, that way they are going to know whether you're the right person and the right fit for them. And I also think that sometimes, and I remember having a conversation about this years ago,
But sometimes people are scared to do things that they do have time for now because they won't scale in the future in terms of like touch points and talking to their clients or potential clients. But this also gives us so much knowledge in terms of designing marketing, because then you're having those actual conversations.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw this, but what was really big earlier this year, a bit more last year, was the creating so many boundaries and like people not having access to you. And although there is truth to that when it comes to like knowing what you're giving and what isn't appropriate, like all that stuff, but when it comes to people being allowed to approach or ask questions or inquire, that was almost in a very indirect way told that that wasn't, you're not high level or you're not self-led or you're not X, Y, and Z if you don't just buy something without asking a question. And what I'm seeing people do now is they're showing more of what kind of conversations they want to have, or there's not this like annoyance of having to speak to their like audience. You know what I mean? It's more of like they want that genuine conversation. So it's just interesting to watch people who have created all these large boundaries around how people can interact with them to now entering a space where they are creating that connection. It's just, it's wild to watch. If you dread the conversations you're having, you're speaking to the wrong people. So when your content is nailed in and you're messaging the right people, the conversations you do have never want you to like throw up or poke your eyeballs out. Like it's always just the most aligned humans. So keep that in mind as well. Yeah.
Ooh, that last point. Such good advice there. I love that. So when it comes to consuming, I know you're not huge on consuming on social media all the time or any of those kinds of things, but what is it that you do? Like, are there books that you read? Are there podcasts that you read? Like, how do you fill your inspiration tank? I'd love to hear.
That's interesting. So I love all any kind of book on anything. I'm currently reading one by Joe Dispenza, anything about the brain, leadership, anything. Ironically, it's never business related. So, and I don't know why I'm like that. It's either a raunchy book or it's something about personal development. I'm just one of those. When it comes to inspiration, I actually do have a day where I dedicate to a scroll. And what I do I don't scroll ever because I don't want to give someone else's business more attention than my own. So I'm creating before I'm ever consuming, but I will give myself a day to like look at what's new, what's trending, what I like, different ideas. An example, I saw someone do a weekly Instagram Q&A series. I loved that. And I'm like, oh, I'm doing that with, I'm in it with Mel, right? So small things like that, I'll just, for the sake of seeing what grabs my attention. And what I'm seeing is like trending, not like trending hooks or trending audios, but more so of like just trending ideas that I really enjoy. So like watching the influx of people going live, I'm like, ooh, that's interesting. I'm gonna start doing that, you know, at least once every 2 weeks, or watching different ways people are positioning reels and how they're, you know, how people are now boycotting the idea of how I made 100K and then read the caption. They're so annoyed with that of like, just show me it on the reel. So it's like just watching people and what they're complaining about in terms of consumption. And then what I enjoy seeing in terms of what stops my scroll. And then from there, it's like, what is my own iteration of that? So like one day per month, I'm like, what inspires me?
I love this because forever I've talked about not letting social media consume you. Because I think that often, especially when we're building businesses and we're online, and I think it's so easy to fall into consuming more than we create and the comparison trap and all of these things. So I love that.
Looping that back into the easy conversation really quick is, if you want content to be easy, but you're constantly distracting yourself with other people's content, you'll never get there. So I think, again, looking at long-term of like, what is easy for you? It's like creating content, you know, all the time on the fly, have ideas. It's like, if that's what you want, doing the work in the moment of not being distracted, sitting with your own thoughts, expressing yourself in your own way, finding your own articulation, it'll be uncomfortable and feel like work in the moment, but that will compound into easy. But it's like, people don't want to do that uncomfortableness of like not opting for distraction. And that will make the biggest difference when it comes to what you actually allow to become effortlessness.
Yes, I love that. I want to switch gears here and talk to you a little bit about evolution in business and switching things up either with your marketing or your offer suite or any of those different areas. So when it comes to evolution in business, it's something I wanted to ask you as well. How do you know when you are, you know, following a curiosity that could just be a distraction And when you are actually making an intentional decision when it comes to evolving your business. I've talked about this a lot on the podcast, but I'm really curious to hear your take and what you look at in terms of criteria for whether or not you want to make a move.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say I'm a balls to the wall kind of person, but I typically find myself like the expansion or evolution finds me. And when things start to get a little stickier, a little harder, or I'm in avoidance of doing something, it's usually a ping for me to look at, does something need to change here? And I'd argue how I run my business is very much, it complements my life versus my life having to complement my business. So I work typically in seasons. There'll be times when I have a primarily passive business model, right? And I'm craving a more live setting now that the baby is getting older and we have a nanny. So I'm in a season now where I can dedicate more time to being live with my people in containers. So we are evolving back into that, which is something I evolved out of before. So I think it's just looking at when we pay attention to maybe there is just an indication that something needs to evolve or change, looking at what season am I in, what makes sense for me in this season, and what would be the most badass version of this? And I get myself hyped about the evolution and I see it long term. And that's when I move.
So to follow up on that a little bit, when it comes to making moves, like because like you said, you've pivoted out of passive to live and kind of back and forth and tried different things within your business, how do you balance what is best? So when it comes to the way you deliver an offer, for example, what is best for the result that you get, that you want to get for your clients, for your community, and the format that is best for you in the season of life that you're in?
I find they're always one and the same because if I am in the cleanest frequency of this feels right for me, I'm going to show up for my people in the cleanest frequency. So if I'm, let's say, because this happened to me in a season years ago when I first began, having these giant launches with one kitchen sink program and having multiple live calls in that program per week. And there was so much exhaustion with that. And that was beneficial to my ideal clients is showing up in that capacity. But for me, I was so drained. So it's like, who is winning in that case? They're getting a watered down version of me, a burnt out version. I'm not happy. So it's like, to me, what's in their best interest is in the best interest of me as well. So to me, it's one and the same. I'm not embarrassed to be like, I want to go live, even though I've preached passive for years. It's like, it doesn't make me a liar. It makes me like, I'm just evolving. We're humans and our nature is to evolve, not fearing that of being not contradicting yourself. You're meant to.
Yes, I love this. And I think that it's so important to differentiate between evolution and when you're bored. I actually did an episode about this in my Aligned Sales sequence. And that was a series of episodes that just went out last month. And I think that it's so, so crucial to figure out the evolution in your business so that you're moving forward and that you're evolving without, you know, succumbing to distractions and holding yourself back inevitably.
The boredom piece is huge. And I think about just a quick analogy is like marriage. When imagine with our audience, we're constantly just dating something new or doing something new because it feels exciting and we're selling our excitement versus being a matured relationship where we are having to find and reinvent that energy of excitement within what already is versus having to constantly rely on something new. So there is a beauty in really landing in your work. And again, you'll know the difference of, is it just an itch I need to scratch or is this actually going to contribute to like my long-term growth? Again, I feel like it comes down to like the long-term intention anyway. It's like, does this actually, is it adding to where you're looking to go? If not, is it just a distraction or again, an itch? Consider. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This is a beautiful place to wrap up. I appreciate you being here so much, Melanie.
Yeah, thank you.
And where can my listeners go to find out more about you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at it's Melanie Aubert, and that's where I'm the most happy. Bye.